Hillary Clinton on the $20 bill. I'm Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Carly Fiorina, excellent in the debates last night. I'm Chris Blake, filling in for Speaker Greg Hughes on the right.
Draper City giving away gifts to car dealerships. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. But first, this news. Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I have on the political left Jim DeBacchus in the studio.
Hi, and I represent Donald Trump.
And on the political right, Chris Blake joins us this morning. Welcome, Chris.
Good morning, Natalie. Great to be here.
We are all just abuzz in the studio about the Republican debates last night. Man, was that a long and multifaceted debate. Chris, I bet you watched the whole thing.
I didn't watch the whole thing because, as I saw in a tweet, I think it was longer than the first Gulf War. It was a long debate, and I did not stick for the undercard. But I will say, from a personal perspective, I did watch a lot of the debate with my 11-year-old daughter, who showed a great deal of interest, had some insightful comments to make throughout, and so it was fun at the Blake household as we watched some of that debate together and shared in the back and forth.
I planned on watching the whole thing, decided it was more important that I take a bike ride, which is about an hour and 15 minutes for my route. So I did my bike ride, came back, and I was stunned that there was still so much debate to be had. And I felt like I had a whole evening of it, Jim.
What did your daughter think? I mean, I'd be interested to hear the opinion of an 11-year-old.
She had a lot of interesting comments. She was very interested in immigration, and she was very frustrated with the vaccine autism discussion. She noted that she has vaccine and does not have autism, but thought that was ridiculous.
Wow.
But
she's gotten the idea between correlation but not causation or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. But she had a number of interesting comments on immigration, on debt. But was very intrigued and very pragmatic.
Okay,
I'll give
Chris,
her credit for
I got
that.
A question for you. How did she react to Jeb Bush, a president's son and president's brother, confessing to smoking pot 4 years ago?
You know, I don't know if she totally picked up on that. The one thing she did notice a lot about Jeb that she didn't like is she said, "What does it matter who his brother and father is? Let's talk about the future." And she harped on that. She didn't like that they kept coming back and back to the past. Let's focus on the future.
She knew how to block out the marijuana thing, but she's, you know, thinking about the future.
Keep an eye on her. When is she eligible to run for governor?
That's what we said. She's still got a couple of years left.
Did she have a favorite?
You know, I don't know that she did. She would probably at some level default to Carly Fiorina, being a strong, independent young woman. She is very pro-woman. So,
Jim, what did you think of Carly last night?
You know, just sticking with the 11-year-old theme, when I go to schools occasionally, they invite me, and I take a class of 11-year-olds and 10-year-olds or even 5 or 6 year olds and split them into half and make them senators. And then I bring out an issue like, okay, put your hands up. I'm swearing you in all in as senators. And they take the oath and they're it. And the debate will be on should we allow smoking in cars by parents? And they're all, of course. And then I talk about freedom and who ought to run it and should the state they run in. And then a few of them peel off and then they have a terrific debate. I think we greatly underestimate the ability of our young people to get involved, to take an issue, to think things through, how much more the schools could do to get are young people as interested in politics as they are in football or soccer or other things. If we just got them enthused and excited about how cool is it to stand up there as a senator and look for the votes, and if you can do that in an hour in a classroom, we could have our voting percentage skyrocket.
I think particularly when you think of the backgrounds of some of the people on the stage, many of them came from backgrounds that you wouldn't think would put you on a stage to be president of the United States of America.
And shouldn't.
All right. But so tell me what you thought of Carly last night, Jim.
Look, lighten up. You know, I mean, you got to smile at least once. And when you zing the Donald, you know, it can't be. I mean, is her whole face shot with Botox? Yeah, you got to be a little bit human, Carly.
But tell me she didn't know her numbers. Tell me she didn't stand strong. Tell me she didn't show a lot of competence.
She drove Hewlett-Packard into the ground. They fired her Unanimously, it was a catastrophe, her corporate experience. And so if she's going to run the country the same way, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. She isn't a very good manager, and Chris, kind of that's what a president does.
I thought she talked about her HP background very well, meaning, you know, the dot-com crisis, mentioning that the people that did fire now are saying it was a mistake and, you know, we were reacting to the times and it was a dysfunctional board. I mean, tell us what you thought of Carly.
Well, I thought Carly was obviously very impressive last night and, you know, is the guaranteed winner of the debate. And it'll be interesting to see how that starts to reflect in the polls. You know, the frustration I have is I'm a little frustrated with my choice of candidates and remain
you
frustrated.
You have a lot of choices.
Too many and none that I particularly like right now. I thought Marco did a good job. I'll say I've always been hopeful that he will rise and show off, and he's certainly impressive last night. But I think I know why GOP voters are a little frustrated, are defaulting to people like Trump and Carson and Fiorina. They have an appeal. It's outside of the political class, which has people frustrated. And that can't be ignored. We can't ignore the frustration that people have towards that. But I don't necessarily particularly like those outsider candidates. I don't know that I trust that they have the skills yet. They haven't shown that to me personally. So I can see why GOP voters are kind of searching for a real viable alternative. And it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. I'm going to say I still don't think the candidate is in the class yet.
Whoa.
Is not right.
There's a Romney pull. You know, Jim, I'm just the opposite from Chris there. I looked at that array of talent up there, and with the exception of about four or five of them, I would be very proud to have many of them be my president.
Holy smoke, Natalie. There went your their vote for middle ground. Sessionalis.
I like Marco Rubio. I like Jeb Bush. I like Governor Kasich. I think that Chris Christie, you know, has some appeal. So I'm a happy Republican camper right now.
I have no comment.
He's stunned.
Who was the biggest loser last night, Jim?
Certainly wasn't Christie.
Okay, you have to think for just a minute, audience.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going. Anyone?
The biggest loser. You know, Rand Paul's just become a blob.
Yeah.
You know, he was big going in. I don't see him going anywhere.
My biggest loser was Senator Cruz. I mean, you know, it's just endorsed by Gun Owners of America, abolish the IRS, and it's just sort of like, can we not get more sophisticated?
Yeah, and I would say the biggest loser is Scott Walker, who everyone looked to as would emerge as that consensus candidate and is invisible and fading, if not already faded.
Yeah. Best line in the debate last night, how about when Carly Fiorina did the comment about women?
That was good. I'll say
she says, I think women heard very clearly.
Yeah, and I'll say a close second was Jeb Bush's retort to Donald about his brother and the way he finally handled that. I'd like to see more of that spunk from him just generally.
That we're a safer America.
We're a safer America.
I know that while my brother was president, we were safe.
Semi-spunk. But when somebody attacks your wife and you're asked a question, could we get an answer that shows a pulse? You know, if somebody attacked my husband the way that Donald Trump did Jeb Bush's and somebody asked me the question, I would be angry and I'd be showing it. And I think America wants to see a president who at least can raise his blood pressure level when his wife or her husband are attacked. And I thought Jeb kind of went, well, that wasn't a very nice thing to say to my wife. You said a really ugly, miserable, personal thing.
Yeah.
I think Jeb
still. No class
still,
in Trump.
Yeah.
Hey, so you guys are both political gurus, so I'm going to just put you on the spot here. Chris, if you were president of the United States and you got the choice on the $10 bill, what woman would you put on?
Well, I am strongly and firmly in the camp that Alexander Hamilton, whom I love, admire, respect, is one of my favorite, should remain on the $10 bill. There's nobody that had a bigger impact on the establishment of our financial system than Alexander Hamilton. So I'm all for getting rid of Jackson off the 20. I loved Rosa Parks, Clara Barton, but absolutely Alexander Hamilton is staying on the 10.
Jim?
Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yeah, boo.
Natalie Gochner would be my choice.
Yeah, Natalie.
For the 20.
It was sort of interesting watching them just die there. All right. In our next segment, we might talk a little bit more about the debate, but we've got a lot of other things. I'm Natalie Gochner. Jim DeBacchus, Chris Blake. Stay tuned.
I'm Jim DeBacchus, proudly on the left.
Chris Blake, standing proudly on the right.
And Natalie Gochner, a proud moderate in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We spent all of the first segment talking about the Republican debate. Let's come closer to home and talk about some local news. And I'm going to just start it off by talking about Draper City's most recent approval of this tax incentive for car dealerships. And as you all know, it pertains to sales tax. And sales tax in our state is distributed 50% based on population all around the state, and 50% of it goes back to the point of sale. And Draper City's passing an ordinance that will give some of that point of sale revenue back to the car dealership. Jim, good
half
tax policy, bad.
Half of it.
Okay, so it's
Draper
not only some
City
of it, but a big portion.
Draper City ought to be ashamed of themselves, and I hope they're all impeached. What they've offered the Larry H. Miller Group, and look, frankly, if I were Larry Miller Group, I'd take the dough. Why wouldn't you? So the question is, who's going to get that money? Who's going to get that sales tax money? Is it going to be the 11th largest car dealership in the United States? They sold 56,000 cars in 2014. It's a billion-dollar corporation. Who's going to get that sales tax money? Larry H. Miller Group, or the people who live in Draper, or a neighboring city.
And it just set up the competitive nature that this is going to happen city after city after city. Mm-hmm. So it's a camel's nose under the tent.
And so what's going to happen is, the ultimate fact about all this is, millions, potentially hundreds of millions of dollars is going to roll from our cities and our counties and our small locations into the coffers of the biggest corporations in our state and in the country. Draper, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
All right, Chris.
Yeah, I understand where Jim's frustration comes from. I don't blame Draper in this, and I think that Draper has made a decision that is in the best interest of Draper City. 50% of zero is zero. So 50% of nothing is, or of something, is actually beneficial to Draper. Draper has been given the incentives to incentivize sales tax. And so they're going to chase sales tax. What generates the most sales tax in this state? Automobile
car
sales.
Dealers, yeah.
And so why shouldn't they be chasing automobile sales? They're going to give up a portion for
Chris,
10 years. But let me say, I don't particularly like the corporate welfare generally. I don't like the incentives we've created for the cities. I just don't blame Draper City. They have the incentive. It's in the best interest of their community to do it. It's going to create more economic development, more sales tax revenue for their city. They should be doing it. But the question is, we need to look at this and align our incentives better at a state level so that we're not doing this. Because this is a problem state to state, country to country,
yeah.
And that's what we need to focus on.
In Capitol Hill parlance, this is what they might call zoning for dollars. I realize that this is not a zoning, but just a different kind of issue. But this notion that you chase the sales tax because of that point of sale take, and you could get rid of this in a heartbeat if you distributed sales tax based on population.
Well, I'll tell you, there's one senator that is going to have a bill in January that will prohibit this. Cities will not be able to deal away their sales tax as an incentive, because that just pits one city after another, and the big losers are the taxpayers and the people of Utah, and the big winners are giant corporate interests. It is a terrible policy, and sometimes Draper City, you need to look at the bigger picture and think about the people that are going to be nibbling off of your businesses with incentives. This was a terrible decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say in Draper City's defense, I mean, Draper City has been looking towards that broader policy goal. You look at the focus and where they want to go with the prison land and the kind of development they want to create there.
50-story skyscraper, if I remember right.
Yeah, absolutely. And regardless of whatever that looks like, their focus is on business recruitment, on income tax dollars. That's the right long-term strategy. But that's not, let's be honest, that's not in Draper City's best interest. That's not what's going to create tax revenue into their coffers. It will for the state. It's good for our school children. And so, hence, it's the right policy. But we need to align the incentives so that local government, state government are on the same page and in some way are mutually benefited when they make decisions that are good for the economics of the state.
I just remember when Costco relocated from Midvale to Murray. Midvale lost its largest sales taxpayer. And in a heartbeat, their budget was just hit for, you know, no reason at all. And there's something about this point of sale distribution that I think needs to be looked at. That's a voice from the political center.
Sure, but population isn't the perfect solve. You know, the downtown Salt Lake City residents would say, hey, look, we import all sorts of people in during the day. If it's population-based, we lose out. So it's easier said than done, but
another issue. San Juan County Commissioner Phil Lyman, he's had his conviction, but his sentencing has been delayed because these judges keep recusing themselves. What is going on, Jim?
Look, like it or not, a San Juan County commissioner went on a wild ride in a forbidden area down a very fragile pathway. He brought a whole band of warriors with him. The feds went after him. He went to federal court. A jury of Utahns heard and convicted him. And then the state's political class went berserk, the Republican political class, including the governor, who threw $10,000 of his political campaign into a legal defense for a convicted county commissioner from San Juan County. Remember, this is his campaign money, which means it had to be spent for a political purpose. So there we are. Lieutenant Governor threw money in. They're all stirred up about this. Mike Noel is going crazy, saying this was a bad judge. The trial judge suffered great personal slings and arrows as the Tea Party went after him. Now we have two other federal judges saying, you know what? I'm not taking that. Oop, I'm recusing myself. It brings a very significant issue, which is how much pressure should be applied on federal judges from the outside, and should federal judges have the audacity to stand up, do their jobs, look at the law, apply every case the same, and not have any hesitancy because something is politically volatile. And I'm not making that accusation because I haven't looked into these cases, and maybe they all did have legitimate reasons, but it sure waves a white warning flag, not a surrender flag, to say, come on, judges, do your duty.
Go ahead, Chris. I can't wait. I know Jim is headed back to D.C. I'm sure he'll have the chance to sit down with Attorney General Eric, or no, who's our AG? Loretta Lynch. Yep, my
very
apologies.
Very good, Chris.
We'll sit down with AG Lynch and make sure that she's coming out to Colorado and arresting everyone. It's federal law. Marijuana is not legal in the state of Colorado, and yet it's over there. It's legal. That, once again, the Phil Lyman case, if we want to enforce federal law across the board, fine, let's enforce federal law. But people get worked up on political causes all the time. And this is an issue of state rights. There are folks that are extremely frustrated and have tried to make a point. Call it civil disobedience. Call it what you want. You may not like it. He's going to get some punishment. But it's a misdemeanor. That's what we're talking about. If we want to talk about the enforcing federal law, let's go over to Colorado and do the exact same thing.
Let's stay with you, Chris, for just a minute and talk about Mia Love saying she wants to avoid a government shutdown over these Planned Parenthood funding issues. That's a move to the middle by Mia Love. I was happy to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've said this before. I think Mia's done a great job focusing on the issues. I think she needs to make sure that people here in Utah know what she's up to, and she needs to be here and remain visible. But yeah, absolutely. And I think it's the right move. And I think she's standing on sanity here and making sure that we move forward. And we, as I talked about earlier, we need to see progress in D.C. and focusing on the things that really matter. And kudos to Mia for doing that.
Jim, do you want to add anything on Congresswoman Love?
I mean, I've never seen her. She is in a bunker somewhere, and she and Chris Stewart are down there yet to meet an actual real voter. Maybe one of these days I'll have an opinion, but clearly her people are saying, shut up, Mia. Don't talk. Don't say anything. And that little soiree to Washington that the taxpayers paid for so she could have a little social event, and then she went, I did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. It was a staff mistake. Okay, I'll pay for it. Hello, Mia.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the political center. Jim DeBacchus representing the political left and Chris Blake on the political right. Other issues we want to talk about. We saw a recent poll that suggested that most Utahns prefer a maverick form of government. This was in relationship to Senator Lee taking on Senate Republicans. I was surprised by the poll, Chris. I thought that most Utahns want to see people problem solve rather than argue, but it is a featured poll today.
Well, I saw the headline. I'll admit I don't know what the poll question was and the poll, and you and I have talked long about polling, and so what was the sample size, how well was it done, I think are all important questions here. I think this reflects sort of this issue that I've been talking about here, and that is people are frustrated, and so at the end of the day, no, they don't want dysfunction, but they want somebody to stand up. And this is a dilemma all elected officials have to handle and deal with right now, is how do I make progress and stand on my principles? And so that's the dilemma that I think this poll reflects right now.
Yeah. Jim, I don't know if you saw it, but it had that 59% of Utahns want Lee to continue challenging Republican leadership, and under a third want him to be a team player.
Who put out the poll?
It was Utah Policy.
See, well, my problem with Utah Policy is they pretend to be a news agency and they get picked up as a news agency, but LeVar Webb, their owner, who's a nice guy, he's a lobbyist, and he gets money sometimes from the very people that he's pretending to do polls for. So I'm not saying the poll is fixed. A lot of them are by Dan Jones, but it is all on how you ask the question. So he put one out about public land and should the president do an Antiquities Act. It was so staged to make Governor Herbert look good, and it had mentioned Obama in there. And so I'm just saying, watch out for Utah Policy, because they have a dog in the fight. So I haven't read this. I'll look at it, but I'd like to know, is Utah Policy connected to Senator Lee at all? That's something that we ought to know, because, as we all know, polls can be connived depending on what the end user wants to receive.
Yeah. You know what I find interesting is everyone focuses so much on the margin of error, sampling error, but there's other kinds of error, like measurement error. And that has to do with how the question's asked and all those sorts of things. And we seem to forget about that sometimes. Okay, a sobering thing I want to bring up, but it's national news, so I think we better talk about it. But the 13 women and children killed in the flash flood in Hilldale, I've watched as Lieutenant Governor Cox has represented our state in that. It's a tender thing, not only because of the loss of life, but because this is a community that's been ostracized from the state for reasons of their practice of polygamy and whatnot. And I think Lieutenant Governor Cox has just done an wonderful and an admirable job going down there and comforting these people.
You know what? I mean, I see Cox as one of the great up-and-coming politicians in the state. And I can envision they're almost twins separated at birth except for hair. And that is McAdams and Cox. And I hope they go head-to-head sometime for some great state job, because they are the wisest, strongest, most level-headed young politicians in the state. If they're not both under 40, they're right around there. So the lieutenant governor, frankly, is able to put a face on things that I just don't find other Utah politicians can do. I don't want to sound like an endorsement, because
I saw a Facebook post.
Hurt him.
I saw a Facebook post, you know, after he returned from the first visit there, and you know, it was just so heartfelt, and he really expressed his affection for the community and tried to help.
Yeah, absolutely. And nothing more to add. Obviously, we feel horrible for those that are suffering down there. I hope it's an opportunity to bring, as you mentioned, that community back into the fold of the state. I mean, the state can help alleviate some of the suffering going on, address some of the issues down there, and kudos to Spencer and others that are down there and giving time and attention to the issue.
Right. Okay, we need to go to gripes, and I'm assuming that you've got yours all ready to go, Jim. You're always got a list that you're looking at.
My gripe this week is about the Salt Lake Bees.
You never know where he's going to go, do you?
There's a group of young people, 11 to 15 years old, that I bumped into that have state custody. The state has the custody of them. They live in a group home. There is virtually no budget for these kids ever to leave this group home. It's terrible. I went down, talked to the general manager of the Salt Lake Bees and said, would you take them? He not only took them down to a ball game, but he gave them all a hot dog and a drink. And those kids, it was like they went to the Super Bowl and the World Series. It was one of the great moments they could ever remember. And for that, I will forever thank the Salt Lake Bees and the classy Larry H. Miller group. So thank you.
Very good. Chris?
Kudos. You know, baseball is the ultimate. I'm going to go football this week. It's not necessarily a gripe. It's the irony of the week, whatever you want to call it. I love that Britton Covey has become a Ute fan favorite. This is a established Utah County, BYU, Provo family name, and here he is. The Ute fans love him. He's been scrappy and fast, and he's a freshman, and it's exciting to see. So go Utes. We've got a big game coming up against Oregon next week, and it's going to be exciting.
In the article I read, he said he's planning on serving an LDS mission, and there'll be a bunch of U fans bummed out because
they really loved watching.
My gripe goes back to the Republican debate. I was just disappointed on the question about what woman should be put on the $10 bill. And the reason it frustrated me is that as they went down the row, they just ran out of people to say. And I just thought, how is that? How is that? Meaning women make such an important contribution to society, and all of these men up there are sons of a wonderful mother that raised them and did what they did. And it just said something about our society to me, that we don't celebrate women enough to be able to have a lot more names to put on the list. That's my gripe. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the Political Center. I'm joined by Jim DeBacchus and Chris Blake. The program's produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.